Then welcome everyone to the first Quantum Fields and String seminar of the new year. I hope you had a great holiday. And we're going to start off with Takato Yoshimura from Tokyo, who's going to tell us all about universal thermal transport and TT-bar deformations. Take it away.
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction and also for the kind invitation. It's a great pleasure that I can talk to you guys here. And it's indeed pity that I cannot come over to the Perimeter Institute and talk directly to you. I have heard so many good things about Perimeter, so one day, hopefully very soon, I can go visit Perimeter. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about today is about universal thermal transport in TT-bar deformed conformal field theories. And this is a work based on, based on recent work with Marco Medeniak and Giuseppe Polcastro at Ecole Normale in Paris. Okay, but before starting, I think it's good to have a kind of remark that I'm basically trained in condensed matter, so it's although we talked about holography and things in this paper, but it's not my primary field. So I'm going to be briefly talking about also holographic aspect, but hopefully I'm not going to say anything inaccurate or stupid. So, but in that case, please interrupt me and correct me, and I'll be very happy to hear all these comments. Okay, so, but hopefully you find what I'm going to tell you interesting from their high energy theory perspective as well. All right. So so let me start with the motivation. So you might think that I initially intended to study transport in TT-bar deformed CFT because TT-bar is what people are studying every day. Everywhere, I think it's a very hot topic, especially in high energy theory, but that was actually not my primary interest. And originally we wanted to study the mechanism of diffusion in many body systems, and in particular quantum many body systems. And so to give you some kind of intuition what we mean by diffusion, I mean, it's not just about standard mass diffusion, but I'm talking generically about the spreading of the hydrodynamic excitations. So for example, if you, for simplicity, for example, if you have a single component in your system and a single conservation law that exhibits pure diffusion, then if you look at this left panel, if you start with some this kind of initial condition, then what this initial condition and the initial profile of the fluid will do after time. As time goes, it's just spreading in a diffusive fashion. And this rate at which this diffusive spreading is taking place is controlled by the constant called the diffusion constant. And this rate is basically square root of t. So this is just purely diffusive case, which is the simplest. But of course, we can make things a bit more complicated by having extra ballistic term. In this case, this fluid packet that is residing initially at this point will be spreading. Initially that would split into half, and then the two bumps will basically propagate on top of the thermal background. For the simplicity here, I'm depicting the case of a linear response regime, in which case basically we can think of these excitations having a fixed velocity. But otherwise, it's going to be nonlinear and a bit more complicated. And if you have both ballistic and diffusive transport, then the ballistic basically contribution is this shift. I mean, the ballistic, literally ballistic transport propagation. But what this diffusion correction does is to kind of make this ballistic propagation fatter and fatter. So it's spreading out in space. So this is kind of picture you can have in your mind. And in general, it's very hard to understand diffusion microscopically. I mean, that is basically, we can understand diffusion from hydrodynamical point of view, so macroscopic point of view, but working at microscopic dynamics and try to see the emergence of diffusion is in general very hard. Recently, actually, in work with Marco Medeniak and Jacopo Denardis, we figured out that there is actually universal contribution to the diffusion constant, even in non-integrable systems. So in integrable systems, it's been known that the diffusion can arise as a consequence of two-body scatterings of particle Hall excitations on top of the thermal background, or more in general, generalized Gibbs ensemble. So basically two pairs of particle excitations go like this and they scatter having spatial displacement. And that is basically the origin of the diffusion in the integrable systems. But now in non-integrable systems, you don't have that kind of stable excitations in general. But we observed that some hydrodynamic modes can actually be thought of as quasi particle in a sense. In a sense that on a hydrodynamic scale, they really don't decay and they really keep their status pretty much like a stable particle with Hall excitations in integrable systems. So these hydrodynamic excitations can scatter like solitons, and even in non-integrable systems, and this gives rise to some bit of contribution to the diffusion constant. but of course, that is not the entire contribution to the diffusion, and in general, there are much more other contributions to the diffusion, but there seems to be some universal contribution to the diffusion. And also, there seems to be also some relation between diffusion and chaos that has been kind of advocated in the context of holography and strongly interacting systems in general recently, which is somewhat surprising because diffusion is in general late-time dynamics, while chaos is basically early-time physics. So a priori, there should be no reason why these two things should have any relation at all, but there seems to be some connection. So there are some progress in understanding diffusion in recent years, and this is the basically motivation for us to really push this direction forward by asking, can we understand the mechanism of diffusion in many-body systems in a more controlled way? So traditionally, diffusion is really understood numerically, but can we do this analytically with analytical handle? And to go forward, we thought maybe we can start with some toy model, which is usually what the theoretical physicists do. And especially in particular, we focus on 1+1 dimension just to make things simpler. Then, we thought, why not then start with two-dimensional conformal field theory? It's analytically rather amenable, and we know a great deal about conformal field theory in 1+1 dimension already. But the thing is, from transport perspective, it's not that interesting. And also, the CFD, there's no... it's also hard to talk about a particle, notion of particle in CFD because no characteristic scale in CFD, so there's no asymptotic particles. And also, we can, before looking into the detail of CFD, we can see that conformal field theory is not that interesting. By invoking that, we can basically understand CFD as a massless limit of some massive interacting integrable systems. And this kind of point of view was, as far as I understand, initiated by the work by Vajanov and Lukyanov and Zamochkov, like mid-90s, where they explicitly showed that in some CFDs, at least like minimal models, you can understand these models by taking massless limit of massive integrable systems. And if you do take that kind of limit, then you see that in that limit, only excitations you've got is just two species, namely right movers and left movers with fixed velocities, plus one, minus one. and they do not scatter basically. So, but by just having this kind of picture here, you really see that, for example, between right and left moving movers, there's no way that they can scatter because they go parallel in this way. But what we can also see that is that there is no scattering between left and right mover either. So if we interpret safety as a sort of limit of massive integrable systems, then we expect that diffusion should arise from sort of scattering process. And because we see from here that there is no scattering, so we conclude that there's no diffusion. And this is actually true. You can work out like a stress energy tensor, correlation function stress energy tensor, for example, or correlation function involving other higher constant charges in safety, and you can see that there cannot be diffusion pretty easily. So in that sense, somewhat boring. So you have to do something about it. But it's kind of nice that we still keep playing with safety because it's really everywhere and it's universal. So we thought, why not try to...
Sorry, can I ask a question and make a small comment?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
So I think Zamolodchikov did consider several systems for which you would have right and left scattering, right? Mm-hmm. So if you start with the theory that has a mass gap, and then you take the massless limit, you often land on theories that have some remnant of scattering, even if it's left and right.
Yeah, that is true. You can see that at the level of thermodynamic beta and that equation. But my understanding is that these phase shifts, the phase shifts that enters into TB equation had some meaning before taking the limit in the massive case as a really something that tells you about how, because the particles scatter. But once you take this limit, then that quantity is no longer having that kind of scattering information, but it just merely tells you about some information of safety, like a value of the center charge or maybe underlying operator content, but not about scattering. So in that sense, it's not about scattering. I mean, that's my understanding. Maybe you didn't disagree, but...
I agree. I mean, the way Zamolodchikov explains it, he says that he agrees that, of course, if you have two things moving at the speed of light, you cannot, they cannot cross, right?
Yeah, that's kind of,
But from the point of view of just Hilbert space, you just act with creation operator, and then you swap the order, right? And you want to organize the Hilbert space and ask how are the various states related by each other and define S matrix through some algebra of creation operators. You can still do it, right? So from that formal definition of just how does the commutativity of the creation operators produce S matrices or not, you can define left movers like that. But it's formal. I agree with you that it's not obvious. I mean, wave packets will not scatter, of course.
So before going to the kind of precise analysis, I think physically we can kind of argue that there seems not to be any scattering. So that is what I want to say at this point. Okay, so thank you for the remark. from this observation, we thought maybe we can deform safety in some way to enforce some kind of scattering. And there is actually a nice, very nice way of deforming, which incidentally has been also popular in the context of high energy theory. So that is nothing but the TT-bar deformation. So this is we decided to look into. And also, the nice thing about TT-bar deformation is really the job this does is really introducing a kind of scattering that we wanted, which is left and right scattering. So it's really ideal for our purpose. Okay, so this is kind of was the motivation, and here's a plan of the talk. So let me, I'm going to quickly remind you of some basics about diffusion and hydrodynamics. Then we'll move on to some very sketchy introduction to TT-bar deformation. Then we move on to thermodynamics, hydrodynamics, and TT-bar safety. And last two things are the basic things. What we talked about in the papers. So the transport in TT-bar safety and end up with conclusion. Okay, so before the TT bar deformation, so it's about, let me talk about hydrodynamics. So I assume that you, many of you already know some bit about hydrodynamics. So essentially it's just a low energy, well, it's not good to say it's just, but it's, of course it's a universal and very strong tool. And it's a, it can describe in a very universal way how large scale dynamics takes place in basically a wide class of many systems, regardless of whether it's quantum or classical. And diffusion, why we want to talk about hydrodynamics is because diffusion is predominantly captured by hydrodynamics. And so let me start with this equation, which is very known, which is Navier-Stokes equation. And for simplicity, I'm writing down some the Navier-Stokes equation, the linear response regime. So in that, basically meaning that this matrix appearing here, like A matrix or D matrix, depends only on the background, homogeneous background, not they do not depend on X of T. And here A matrix is called linearization matrix, and it's evaluated, like I said, with respect to the background state. It's just the derivative ratio between current and Q, which is the charge density average. What is important here, though, is this diffusion matrix, Carly D, and this satisfies the Einstein relation, which is L equals DC, and this L is called Onsager matrix. I'm going to define this shortly. And here C matrix is called the susceptibility matrix. And this is just the standard generalization of usual susceptibility involving the magnetic field and all these things. So just now promoted to matrix involving a bunch of conservation laws. I mean the charge density, charge average, density average. Okay, so here the Onsager matrix is something important here, and this is basically what I'm going to evaluate using integrability. So to understand what this quantity is, it's kind of instructive to remember how this Sij, which I defined as a two-point function, so Qi and Qj over some background, homogeneous background, spreads in space-time. So this left-hand side quantity is expected to behave like this right-hand side. I mean, asymptotically, this is not exact. So for large t, this is this equality is expected to hold, and this, for example, can be understood in this way. So if you divide both of these sides by t squared, and you take large t limit, then from left-hand side, what you get is really just contribution from x that is more or less the same as t. So like basically meaning that left-hand side will only know about the excitations that are propagating in a ballistic way. So the x and t should be proportional. And this is taken care of by this quantity d. So with that call, this just d matrix, which we call Drude weight. So this is something that knows about ballistic transport in the system. But if you, this is of course a dominant contribution if you really coarse grain the surface and large scale. But if you want to see how hydrodynamic excitations can are actually spreading out, then you have to subtract that kind of ballistic contribution. And then if you do that, I mean, subtract this guy from right-hand side and divide by T, then what you see is the how excitations are spreading in a diffusive way. And this strength of this diffusive spreading is controlled by the matrix called L. So they list these quantities like root weights and Onsager matrix defined, or can be defined also in this way as written here, involving two-point functions of current operators. So by using some space-time space stationarity and conservation laws, you can recast two-point functions of Qi and Qj into two-point functions of Ji and J. I mean, this kind of two-point function involving currents. So the computation of the Onsaga matrix is what I'm going to do, but it's a rather formidable task in general. It's like you can see, it's two-point functions involving very non-trivial current. The operator, which is current. So it's hard to compute. But it turns out that it's actually possible in integrable systems, like it was done 2 years ago by Koppo de Nardes, Denis Barnard, and Benjamin Doyle, by really breaking this into a bunch of matrix elements and calculate these matrix elements, and by resumming all this, you can calculate this quantity in integrable systems. And this is the method they employed is something that the formula they obtained from this kind of machinery is something I'm going to employ in order to evaluate this Onsaga matrix in TT body form safety. Because we can, like I said, we can understand, interpret the TT body on CFT like some sort of limit. TT body deformation of some sort of massless limit of massive integrable systems. So I'm going to stick to that point of view. Okay, so now TT body deformation. So I guess a lot of audience are already quite familiar with the notion of TT body deformation. So, but nonetheless, let me just quickly introduce what the TT body deformation is. So it's just it's basically defined in this way by incrementally adding the extra term, which is proportional to determinant of stress energy tensor to the Lagrangian of your original theory. So by this adding this term in an incremental fashion, you can generate a flow of kind of TT-bar deformed QFT, starting from the seed QFT. So in my case, I am considering this QFT as a two-dimensional safety. And this is by dimension counting, it's 11 deformations. So that would immediately kind of trigger the people who know about things about quantum field theory, because it's going to be not that good, I mean, from perturbative point of view, and also UV region could be very messed up by this event deformation. But it turns out that it's a quite well controlled theory actually, and it might as well be UV complete. So despite of being event deformation, TT bar deformation is very well behaving, and also its exact property like finite size spectrum and thermodynamics and function, all these quantities are already worked out, and also its relation with seemingly unrelated things like holography or random geometry, and all these things have been actively investigated. So it's a great deal about TT bar deformations is already known, but I'm pretty sure there are still many things to be understood. Okay, so one of the virtues of the TT bar deformation is that you can get the exact spectrum, provided that you know the spectrum of the original theory. So how does it work? So you have, let's say you have the finite volume energy eigenvalue of the original theory, then you can get that of the deformed theory by solving the following Bagas equation. So it turns out that this finite volume energy eigenvalue in the deformed theory satisfies this kind of very simple equation called the Bagas equation. So all you've got to do is to solve this, and then you get the spectrum of the deformed theory as well. But being said so, it's in general not the case that you know the exact finite volume energy eigenvalue in the original theory. And even if you know it, it to be, although this equation is simple enough, it would be in general hard to really solve the Bagas equation. As far as CFT is concerned, you can actually solve this Bagas equation explicitly, and you can obtain the exact finite volume spectrum in the TT bar deformed CFT. But I actually don't need to know the higher finite volume energy eigenvalue. Only thing I need to know is the ground state, finite volume ground state energy, because I'm going to take a thermodynamic limit, and all I need to know is the basically free energy, finite temperature free energy in the thermodynamic limit, which is actually related to the ground state energy in the finite volume in this way. So this is what I'm going to use. And it turns out that for CFT, it can be written in this very nice way. So, but a caveat here is that this is indeed already incorporating some kind of subtleties that can arise in TT-bar deformation. For example, if you take a sigma positive, then if you really increase the temperature here inside of these square roots, then this will get negative eventually, and that would be not good. I mean, that would basically mean that the spectrum is complex, so which I think is hard to make sense of physically. So this is kind of signifying that indeed the high energy state UV region of the theory is really strongly affected by this deformation. But what I'm going to do, as long as you keep your temperature low enough, I mean, compared to this threshold temperature called the Hagedorn temperature, everything should be fine. All right. So, okay, another thing that is very useful for us, for our purpose concerning TT bar deformation, is that if your original theory, the seed theory, is integrable, then actually you can see that only effect stemming from the TT bar deformation is just a simple multiplication of the extra factor to your two-body scattering matrix. So integrability basically means that you've got an infinite number of conservation laws. And also this amounts to a surprising fact that any many-body S matrices can boil down to a bunch of products of two-body S matrices. So you need to know, only thing you need to know is the two-body S matrices, and then you can build all other many-body S matrices out of these two-body S matrices. Right. Okay. So like I said, Q2 and TT bar deformation, then what it does just to introduce extra factor called the CDD factor to this two-body scattering matrix. And this is also called gravity dressing from gravity reason, I think. So this is basically the only modification you've got. So the S0 is matched by this factor e to the I sigma, and then that is already your two-body scattering matrix in your deformed theory. Of course, this sigma is dependent on the fact whether your underlying theory is massive or not. If it's massive, then the sigma of theta is given by this way, where the small m is just the mass of your massive theory, and theta is just rapidity. On the other hand, if your underlying system is massless, then your sigma of theta is having this kind of form involving the momentum of right and left movers. And here p plus minus of theta is defined in this way. And here large m is it doesn't have a interpretation as mass anymore, because it's taking it's a massless theory. It's more like the quantity that is taking care of a crossover from the infrared to the ultraviolet. So having this extra term, what you can see is that originally there was no scattering between left and right movers like this, but after the inclusion, the perturbation by the TT bar deformation, you see that now left and right movers now scatter in this way. They repel each other and change trajectory like this. And the only effect is that you have this kind of phase shift, which is a fingerprint of integrability, basically. So this is good news for us because this now this theory will now have scattering non-trivially controlled by the deformation parameter sigma. So things would be non-trivial from the transport perspective. Okay, so this is what we can learn from TT bar deformation. And maybe so far it's a bit somehow abstract and it doesn't really provide you intuition about physics of TT bar deformation. So let me give you some intuition, which was recently advocated by a work by John Cardy and Benjamin Doyle, stating that intuitively speaking, TT bar deformation induces the width of the particles in the original theory. So for example, if you start with free boson gas, then you can really work out this deformation and see that this deform theory can be really thought of as quantum Hadron gas. You can actually do the same kind of deformation to the classical free particles, and then you would see that this deformation amounts to the really standard usual classical Hadron gas. And this was also mentioned in the paper by Yunfan Jiang. And also this kind of attachment of extra widths to the underlying particles can be inferred from our observations in our work, which we discovered that CFD is once it's deformed, then this it can behave like a sort of cell automaton. I mean, of course, it's not the microscopically they are the same, but as far as transport is concerned, these guys basically satisfy the same hydrodynamic equation. So in that sense, they can be identified from a transport perspective. Okay, so but this is also kind of consistent with the another interpretation of the TT bar deformation, which is the state-dependent coordinate change, which is has been introduced in several works, like the works by Conti, Negro, and Tateo, or Cardi. So this can be really, the TT bar deformation can be really understood as a kind of coordinate change, but it's really state dependent. So at each point of the point in the space time, after the coordinate transform, it knows something about underlying state. So it's a bit not conventional, but we can still understand in this way. And this is the statement as state dependent coordinate changes, like changing the metric. So in this new metric, so the free space in which particles can explore basically reduces or increases. So originally, the particles, for example, in this free boson gas case, can propagate basically everywhere on along this chain, line, and they don't even scatter. So they literally can go everywhere as they wish. But once you tune the deformation, then they acquire width. But this can also be understood as a sort of reducing the amount of the free space they can explore. Because of the having extra widths to these particles, now they cannot explore the entire region of the line, but rather they explore a bit a reduced amount of the space. And this is understood as the change of metric, which is kind of set. So we can say something like this. So emergence of scattering is because of the change of the free space or change of the metrics. So I think this kind of picture is very helpful in understanding what the TT-bar deformation is actually doing. So the scattering generated by this TT-bar deformation is really because of this change of the free space, the availability of the space in which the particles can explore. And the same idea was actually employed in the context of hadrons and generalized hydrodynamics, which is a hydrodynamic theory for integrable systems. So by having this kind of change in the metric, you can actually map the hydrodynamic equation, a generous hydrodynamic equation to the somewhat simple equation and solve it using characteristics. So this picture is, I think, nice to have it in general. So okay, so far has been all about something that has been already known. And let me give you some kind of very short list of developments so far, which is really, I think, mainly focused on high energy context. Like TT-bar deformation can be understood as a coupling to the Jacquard-Tété Bowen gravity, or it has a holographic dual, which is basically same as basically states that the TT-bar deformation to the holographic safety amounts to the introduction of a finite cutoff to the ADS radius. Also, there was another interesting point of view that TT-bar deformation is basically equivalent to the coupling to the random geometry. And also there are a bunch of progresses in the past years. But what has been, I think, largely missing is the understanding the implication of TT-bar deformation from the transport perspective, or in general in a condensed matter perspective. So it'd be nice to understand what TT-bar deformation entails from the transport perspective. And that is precisely what I'm going to do. And also there's a nice review by Yuken Jan, so if you are interested in TT-bar, you can have a look at it. But I really chose a very limited number of, a huge number of publications about the TT-bar deformation, so there are really a number of activities going on. Okay, so far it was about just standard TT-bar stuff. So from here on, I will move on to generalized hydrodynamics for TT-bar deformed systems. Is any question so far? Hopefully it's clear.
Just one question. So this hydrodynamics for the CFT, can I have in my mind, from the point of view of hydrodynamics, could a CFT be just a free scalar or something very, very simple?
Yeah, sure. It's basically free scalar. Like free boson and free fermion, they behave in the pretty much same way. As far as transport is concerned, the CFT is more or less free system. So yeah, you really can think of them as a free scalar.
And then if that is the case, for the free scalar, my understanding was that actually TT-bar was only one of an infinite set of deformations that Tomologikov and Smirnov studied, right?
Yeah.
So sure. Can you also study all these other TT-bar-S deformations?
Oh, yes, this, absolutely. We can do all these TT-bar-like deformations, which goes by the name of, Smirnov-Tomologikov deformation. You can, of course, do it. And all these kind of deformation basically gives rise to the same consequence, which is just the introduction to some non-trivial additional factor like this acidity factor. So, and this can be very nicely incorporated into the hydrodynamics for the
Then the interpretation as just a simple giving some width to the particles, that's no longer the case, right? It's no longer.
Indeed, that's not one. Yeah, exactly. That is the interpretation. It works only for the TTPA deformation. For higher charges, that is not the case. Yeah. Right. Okay. So let me move on. The tool I'm heavily relying on in understanding transport in TTBAT deformation safety is generalized hydrodynamics, which is a theory that I have been working on and also initiated with my supervisors several years ago. So it's really a hydrodynamic theory for integral systems. What makes this application of idea of hydrodynamics to integral systems somewhat difficult is because basically in integral systems you have an infinite number of conserved charges. So by just remembering that hydrodynamics is really about working at hydrodynamic equations that are as many as the number of conservation laws in your system, it looks rather hopeless. I mean, you have to really work out an infinite number of hydrodynamic equations if you want to apply hydrodynamics to integrable systems, and that doesn't sound so good, I mean, a priori. But actually, there is a very nice way of getting around, which is expressing these charge density average and current average using the quasi-particle basis. And this is achieved just because the underlying theory is integral. And this first thing is this charge density average, which can be written in this very simple way. Let me turn off this blue light cut. Okay. This has been known for 20 years, and it was introduced in a paper by Zamochko for Ubersala and other people. And it's I didn't write definitions of these quantities. Basically, h of theta here is one particle eigenvalue of the conserved charge, large qi. So if you apply large qi to the one particle eigen basis, then this h of theta is what you get as an eigenvalue. There is another quantity appearing in the integration, which is rho of theta. And this is basically a quantity that controls the distribution of quasi particle, and it's called the root density. So rho of theta is really about distribution of quasi particle. But having this, you basically, and integrating over these guys, you get the average of charge density. And for the current, this was actually a novelty. And this had been not known for many years, but it was finally understood in our works, which is that to have a current average, you only thing you need to do is to introduce extra term called effective velocity in this formula for the charge density average. So they really look the same, except the appearance of effective velocity. So this is very nice because it's very simple enough. So I'm going to, I haven't written down also either about this definition of effective velocity. It satisfied some certain integral equation, and it's not really important what kind of integral equation is satisfied this effective velocity. And what is important though here is that this effective velocity is basically can be thought of as a sound velocity of the excitations on top of the thermal background, or more in general, generalized Gibson symbol background. So sound velocity is in general excitation of on top of the ground state, like Fermi-C, for example. But you can also consider sound velocity for the excitations on top of not the ground state, but thermal background. And this velocity is precisely that. Okay, so having these two quantities, you can plug these guys into the hydrodynamic equations. And there's a well-known fact that the space spanned by h of theta is L2. So the h of theta spans forms a complete basis of L2 space. So using this completeness, you can basically claim that the hydrodynamic equation at the level of quasi particle must also hold. So you end up with infinite number of hydrodynamic equations to just a single equation at the price of having extra continuum parameter theta. So, but this can be very nicely treated in a very simple way. So this is quite a great simplification. And this is this basically works for any integral systems, literally any integral systems, as long as it can be solved by Bethe-Ansatz. And this has been applied in many situations, protocols, I mean, out of equilibrium protocols, and including many experimentally relevant protocols, and confirmed the validity of the equation. So in the community, this generalized hydrodynamic theory, which is called a GHD, is now understood as a really powerful universal theory that can characterize large scale dynamics of integral systems. And also it's experimentally verified. So it's not just a weird conjecture from theoretical physicists. Okay, so having this GHD introduced, now let me apply that to the TT body form CFT. So as I said at the beginning, I interpret CFT as a massless limit of some sort of massive integral, the integrable systems. So under this kind of interpretation, we can use the method by Bajanov and Dukenov and Zamochkov, BLZ, and they write down TBA-like equation, nonlinear integral equation for CFTs. And this has been done, for example, for minimum models. And also, somewhat surprisingly, this was also done for the Liouville CFT, which is by any means a simple CFT. It's an irrational CFT, so it's a bit surprising that also it's was applied to this kind of CFT. But I, as far as I am aware of, it's not well very well understood that it, if BLZ can cover any CFT and for which CFT it can be applicable. But let's assume that I just focus on only on CFTs that are known to be treated by BLZ kind of formalism. And also for the simplicity, let me also focus on just the other case where there are two particle species, namely right and left movers. I mean, in general, for example, in minimal models, it has many particle species, pretty much like XXD spin chain, but it doesn't really matter because they scatter in a diagonal way, and it's just additional irrelevant complications. So I'm just forget about having multiple particle species and really focusing on this two particle species case. But it's enough, and it's the principle works for any other cases. So this equation for the quantity called pseudo energy is the equation that is very important. this pseudo energy can be morally understood as a sort of generalization of bare energy. So if you forget about second and third terms appearing in this equation on the right hand side, then it's basically B2 times E, and this is called source term, and this is basically same as what you have in the free case. So epsilon appears in basically the distribution function, like n of theta, and the n of theta is defined as a 1 over 1 plus e to the epsilon. So if you forget about this second and third term, then it's really just a Fermi distribution function. But of course, that is not the case here because we are dealing with a non-trivial CFD with some interaction. So for a moment, again, if you forget about the third term, then and include just what first and second term, and these guys describe thermodynamics of CFD. And as initially discussed a bit, this phase shift appearing here is not really a scattering phase anymore. It's after taking the massless limit. So it's more like some kind of quantity that takes care of interaction in CFD. And this the value of the T of theta and theta prime is has to encode some information about the model, like a center value of center charge and other things. And if you just keep this first and second terms, and you see that the scaling, like M to the SM, where S is just prime, some parameter, then you see that this really shifts the rapidity in this way. So this is kind of consistent with our expectation that there's no characteristic scale in CFT. And also there we can do a sanity check that there's a formula that free energy can be written in terms of pseudo energy in this way. It's pretty much like what happens in the thermodynamic bed ansatz or integrable systems. And you can reproduce the usual free energy for the CFT. So this is also nice that the theory is working consistently. But what we wanted to do here is to really introduce explicit scattering term coming from TT bar deformation, which is the third term in this pseudo energy. And this T plus minus or minus plus is really what takes care of the scattering from the right and left movers. And having this term, you can now move on and do hydrodynamics. I mean, generalize hydrodynamics. Okay. So you have to do a bit of manipulations and computation, but the long story short, you can actually observe that effective velocity, the quantity that I introduced a few slides before in here, that is appearing in the hydrodynamic equation, can actually be written in a very simple way in the TT bar deformed CFT. So it turns out it does not depend on the quasi particle anymore. It just depends on the value of the chiral energies in this way. So it's somewhat surprising because usually it depends on theta, but it's not the case in here. And it's meaning that all the quasi particles are transported with the same velocity. So this was a bit of a surprise. But it also makes sense in a sense that there are two only velocities for underlying safety, which is plus and minus one. So that in that sense, it's also sort of makes sense. And here the chiral energy is just the energies for right and left movers. And using these chiral energies, you can actually immediately observe that the first two equations of the a huge number, I mean, basically infinite number of hydrodynamic equations decouple from the rest of hydrodynamic equations and form a closed hydrodynamic equation in this way. So the first equation, which is energy corresponding to energy conservation law, and the second equation corresponding to the momentum conservation law, decouple from the rest. So they are somehow protected by the TT bar deformation. And this is, I think, interesting. And it's quite characteristic of TT bar deformed CFT, I think. So because this equation is closed, you can really solve it by just focusing on this two set of equations. So in a sense, we simplified equation that is labeled by the continuum parameter to just the two coupled simple equations. And this equation is actually nothing but the hydro equation that appears in the famous, well, it is famous in the integrability community which is called Rule 54. So it's a reversible cell automaton, automaton model. So the hydrodynamic equation for this model actually coincides with this hydrodynamic equation. And this cell automaton model is very simple, actually. Because it's cell automaton, it's defined on the lattice, discrete lattice and discrete time. And the rule is just very simple. And basically, the only excitation they've got is like right and left movers that are pretty much like safety. And they scatter also like a TT bar deformation, but with a fixed phase shift. So there is now a correspondence between energy quanta of TT bar deformed safeties and solitons in the Rule 54. So solitons can be understood as energy quanta. I'm sorry, the solitons in the Rule 54 can be understood as energy quanta. And a priori, this was again not something we expected, but in retrospect, it also makes sense. And also, caveat here is that this is not same as saying that thermodynamics of these systems are the same. They are, of course, different. One reason is because in the Rule 54, the right movers. So collinear modes, excitations can be never closer than the unit lattice length just because it's defined on the lattice. So there is a kind of, so to say, hardcore interaction between the right and the right movers. That is, in general, absent in the TT bar deformed safety. There's no such hardcore interaction between hardcore repelling between the same species in TT bar deformed safety, and they can be arbitrarily closer to each other just because it's defined on the continuum. So there are such distinctions, but as far as transport is concerned, that's not the case.
Okay, would thermodynamics be the same?
I'm sorry?
If it was a fermion instead of a boson, then you could also not put them on top of each other, right? So would that mean that for fermions, the matching would also include thermodynamics?
Free fermion. So in the massless free fermion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think they are still. So for the massless free fermion like Ising CFT, there is no. Interaction between the same species. I mean, so for example, the second term in the pseudo energy here, it just goes away. But free fermion can be really understood as a Rule 54, but it's still the hardcore interaction is absent. So in that sense, there's no identification still, even without this self-interaction.
Why do you say so? S matrix is minus one. So I agree that derivative of S matrix is zero. So that's why it doesn't show up in those equations. But the S matrix is different from free boson.
No. What I mean is that what the point here is that the presence or absence of hardcore interaction. So in the Rule 54, there is a hardcore interaction. So actually, there is a non-trivial second term in here. It's just that it does not depend. So the phase shift does not depend on neither theta or theta prime. It's just a constant because it's a hardcore. So it's just a constant. But in the free fermion case, there is no such term because the S matrix itself is already constant. So if you take derivative of it, then it just goes away. So there's no such term is appearing here. And this is important. This gives rise to, I think, constraint in the thermodynamics.
So let me quantitatively then what exactly matches. So for example, in TT bar, there is a parameter of deformation, right?
Yeah.
Where is that parameter in the Rule 54?
It's basically morally, we can understand that the parameter with TT bar deformation is the lattice length of the Rule 54. So yeah, that is true. Actually, we have to tune the sigma to be one in order to make this identification really precise. So this sigma which is the TTP deformation parameter, is basically the unit lattice length in the rule 54.
And what about these other deformations that I asked before? Can you map them to other automata or?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. And that is certainly something we are trying to look into in more detail. I think first thing we should look at is JT body formation. in that case, it's really non-trivial, which is, because JT body deformation really breaks party symmetry. So I don't, as far as I'm aware of, I'm not, I don't know any party breaking set automaton. We can cook up some sort of rule, that is true. So yeah, that would be interesting. I just, I'm not sure if there is any, a priori there is, I don't think there's no set automaton that is, that looks like reproducing the dynamics of JT by deformation, for example.
I also did not know about this automata before your paper, so I learned from your paper. So, so that's why I'm asking this question. So, but what about cellular automata to describe discretizations of massive theories? Can you do it, or does it need to be massless because you need to move at 45 degrees?
Okay, that's also a good question. So. For at least for rule 54, because the underlying dynamics of the rule 54 is like a right and left universe, they are scattering, so it's really kind of reminiscent of CFT. If you have, if you can have a set automaton corresponding to massive theory, I think so. I think we can have it. I just don't know any kind that kind of set automaton, but I'd say there's no reason that would. Why there should not be such set automaton. I think we can really think carefully and try to cook up such set automaton.
Okay, maybe we can discuss a little bit more at the end.
Sure.
Technical, but skeptical. Yeah. I'm skeptical about that. Yeah.
Okay. We can talk about it later. Right. So yeah, I'm sorry. I'm kind of running out. How much time? I mean, is there a time restriction or?
Well, I guess the official time restriction is if
people 1 hour, right?
End their day, but like officially, you have like say like 5 more minutes. But
Sorry. Yeah.
Sure Pedro's gonna stick around to ask some.
Yeah, let me go relatively quicker. So, after all this trouble that I have been through, actually, we can get this hydrodynamic equation rather simply. From just invoking trace relation in the TT body form CFT. So we know that these first two equations are always satisfied, just hydrodynamic equations. And what matters is what kind of equations of state is satisfied for the hydrodynamic equations. And the reason why we have to play with all the bunch of hydrodynamic equations in integrable systems is because in general, equations of state involves all the average of all the higher charges. That is the reason why I have to, you know, a priori prepare all these hydrodynamic equations. But the somewhat surprising thing is that you don't have to do it in the TT body form CFT case. Just because, like I just said, the first two equations decouple from the rest. And you can see that actually foreseen actually from this trace relation, which is connecting the trace of the stress energy tensor and the determinant of the stress energy tensor. And of course, this is not the identity. It should be, as usual, understood as the identity that is valid only when evaluated inside of some correlation functions. But if you have this, which can be obtained by some sort of a boundary QFT kind of argument. Once you have this kind of a translation, then you can obtain the equations of state, the third equation appearing in this first line, it's just straightforwardly. So this is, I think, a very nice shortcut of just getting this rule 54 type of hydrodynamic equations. And you don't really have to invoke BLZ, all these fancy things, and just get this. But this is, again, just because underlying model is safety. In general, I believe this trace relation is not true anymore. Right. Okay, so now the main dish, although time is I'm kind of running out of time. So we wanted to study the non-equilibrium steady state in the partition protocol. And the partition protocol is actually a very simple protocol starting from two thermal bus, or more in general Gibson sample bus. So if you look at this cartoon, you have initially left and right bus with a temperature TL and TL, and you join them together at T equals zero and see what happens. And typically what happens is that some non-trivial out of equilibrium steady state emerges in between the light cone. Well, sometimes light cone is not sharp, like in non-relativistic systems, but in relativistic systems, the light cone is always sharp, and there is some non-trivial current in between. And this current can be calculated using hydrodynamics explicitly. The derivation is not important here. If you look at this result, which is the energy current in the non-equilibrium steady state, so this is a fixed value because it's a non-equilibrium steady state, it's constant, is given in this very simple way. So there are two effects. One effect is coming from the change of thermodynamics, which is encoded through this the terms in the curly bracket. So this curly T is sort of dressed temperature, if you wish, or generalized temperature, in a sense that if you take sigma to zero, then this is just temperature, if you see that. But because of a non-trivial deformation, you have kind of change of thermodynamics. But also it's important that this contribution from the change of thermodynamics coming from the already first order in sigma. So that is a kind of important remark, because another effect that is coming from scattering, which is taken care of by ERL, is coming from the first contribution from such scattering is proportional to the square of sigma instead of linear in sigma. So I would say whenever you see the quantity that is has a leading contribution, whose leading contribution in sigma is proportional to sigma square instead of linear in sigma, then it means that that quantity has something to do with the scattering, not thermodynamics. So this ERL is really because of the scattering between the right and left movers. And then you see that explicitly by seeing that the curly TL and curly TRs are appearing in here. And if you take a sigma to zero limit, then you reproduce the famous result by Benjamin Doyon and Denny Barnard. Pure safety result that works for any safety. And you can also compute other transport quantities like Drude weight in this way, which is very simple indeed, actually. If you look at the safety result, then they are almost identically, they are the same, except the replacement of the sound velocity in the safety case with the effective velocity, which is sound velocity, sort of sound velocity in the presence of TT bar deformation. So we have simple expressions from the DHD kind of point of view. But the interesting point is that they also can be computed exactly using holography, and they also give rise to exactly the same results. So we have perfect agreement. Hopefully it's not going to be hazy, but let me give you some bit about holography. So we work in pure gravity in 3D, so it's, I think, the simplest. And assuming that the space, the TT bar deformed safety ellipse is the Lorentzian cylinder, basically, it's a flat space, the most generic geometry is given by the Bernardos geometry. In this way, you can, of course, have a Fafnir grab expansion for the metric in general. But if you implement this kind of condition, then you can see that the most generic geometry is Banach's geometry, where L and L bar are given by this kind of Sturzenegger tensor average. But the point here is that usually the CFT lives at the boundary of the ADS, which is rho equals zero. But as mentioned in the paper by Marco and Meze and Felinde, if you have TD bar deformation, then this kind of a boundary is shifted towards the inside the bug of ADS. So meaning that you have now boundary at rho equals mu, which is not zero. And that is where the TD bar deformativity resides. And this is good. TD bar deformation actually has a nice interpretation from holography point of view. And if you do the following state-dependent coordinate change from the small UV to large UV, so small UV was the kind of auxiliary Banados light cone coordinate to the actual coordinate of the TD bar deformativity by demanding that du dv is the induced metric at the rho equals mu, you can see that this kind of condition has to be satisfied between these two set of coordinates. And this is precisely the state-dependent coordinate change that I introduced several slides before. And here, the small uv are the little light cone coordinates for the original CFT, while the large uvs are for the deformed CFT. In terms of small uv, you can actually think of the TT bar deformed CFT as a sort of pure CFT with this state-dependent coordinate. So, and we know that in pure CFT, the solution to the partition protocol is very simple, just a simple light cone emanating in the spacetime with a light cone velocity being plus and minus one. So this can be just solved easily like this. In terms of U and V coordinate, I mean small UV, sorry, like this for the L. Because L and L bar is related to the average of the Sturzenegger tensor. But what we want to do instead is to re-express this in terms of large U and V, because that is precisely the coordinate for the deformed CFT. And in general, it's hard to work out this kind of state-dependent coordinate change, but in the partial protocol case, you can actually work it out and see that from the large U and V, actually, which are defined by X plus T and X minus T respectively, the only effect is the kind of deformation of the light cone. So you have a deformed light cone like this, and that is the only effect from the TD bar deformation. And this is not perturbative, it's really exact. So this is kind of improvement, I think, of the results introduced in the work by Marco, Meze, and Felinde. Anyways, having this, then now you can reproduce all the results computed from the GHD. So everything is consistent. So, okay, so far it was about the basic transport. Okay, this is the last slide. We can also compute the momentum diffusion, but this can be done only from integrability, not from holography. You might also wonder why you don't compute energy diffusion. It's energy diffusion is presumably simpler somehow. This is just because Lorentz invariance basically means that there's no energy diffusion because energy is conserved in Lorentz invariant system. So you have to look at momentum diffusion. But still, we hope that it can cause non-trivial information about transport. And this is not non-zero because of the left and the right scattering. Okay, and we can compute basically employ the formula obtained by these works by Dinaldis, Banach, Stoyom, and other people. And you see that there's actually a very nice, simple equation for even for the momentum Onsaga metrics. So it's very simple and not dependent anything on in any complicated way. And again, this is quadratic in sigma, so it's kind of fingerprint of the fact that this quantity knows things about scattering. And also it can be written in terms of entropy as well. So this was obtained by integrability and a BAZ kind of approach. So basically meaning that presumably this is only true for safeties that admit BAZ kind of description. But surprisingly enough, this is, I'd say, something we didn't quite expect. This momentum-Osaka metric somehow seems to be universal in that we can compute that this is true also up to the second order in sigma from just purely from conformal perturbation, so without having any integrability whatsoever. So, I'd say this looks like universal, but the question now is, what about other kind of diffusion constant corresponding to other higher constant charges that I'm rather skeptical if they are universal. I think universality of the diffusion is just because I just for the momentum Osaka matrix, but still it's good to have something universal. And you might also wonder, can we reproduce this holographically just to make sure if it's universal? It turns out that is not the case. At least as of now, it's not the case because it's very challenging. One way of seeing that the difficulty is there is to invoke that holographically, what we can compute is not Osaka matrix, but rather a bare diffusion matrix. So you can remember that the Osaka matrix is given by diffusion matrix times susceptible matrix. And this diffusion matrix is something that holography can compute, and that is usually that quantity, diffusion constant, has a non-zero contribution even after taking large central charge limit. But in here, it turns out that if you really take a large central charge limit, which is semi-classical limit, there's no contribution, so basically diffusion constant is zero, which indicates that the subleading contribution that is often neglected in the usual case has to be included. So the things that are suppressed by 1 over C or the power of 1 over C. So somehow diffusion is arising in a TT bar deformed CFT in a very weird way, a very unusual way compared to other holographic systems, like holographic CFT in the higher dimensions. So that is observation about the holography. So, this is the conclusion, but it's kind of repetition. So, and I'm running out of time. So let me finish here. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks a lot for this nice talk. And thanks a lot for waking up at 7 in the morning to deliver this talk to us.
Okay, pleasure. Thank you.
Are there any questions? I guess everybody feel free to unmute yourselves and just shoot.
Yeah, it's kind of late there as well, right? So yeah, I'm glad that some of you are still there.
Yeah, so in this automata, the story of the automata at time t plus one depends on the story of the automata at a few steps before, right? Like at time zero and minus one, perhaps.
And yeah, so you know depends... to know. And it only... you know to know. Sorry, I didn't hear. Go ahead, please. Yeah.
And it only depends on the local history of these particles, right?
Exactly. I just sent.
And therefore, there are a few rules, like maybe four rules, five rules, six rules, right? There are a few rules that you have to specify, and that's it. But for massive theories, because you can have particles coming at different slopes and so on, I think I cannot see how you would have enough freedom with such simple rules to code any momentum dependence, right? Because here there's no momentum dependence. Things either meet or don't meet, right? So it's either meet or not meet. There's no function of momenta. I don't see how you could introduce functions of momenta in cellular automata. So maybe that's my question, if you have an idea on how to do it.
Well, if I'm truly honest about it, I'm not sure. Yeah, true. That sounds like a complication, of course. One way to maybe crack it is to make somehow non-local, less non-local, like allowing not just adjacent lattice sites, but also let the root have to know something more about the neighboring sites, like not just adjacent, but more a bit like, let's say, 4 or 5 sites, and then use this information to update the chain from t equals 0, let's say, to the t2, to the 1. That might be the way. Well, of course, if it, it's true that it's kind of non-local, and it might be a problem. But you said that there can be just like 4 or 5 rules, but that is actually not true. You can also have more rules, because the way to do a cellular automaton, I mean local cellular automaton at least, is to implement the rules for let's say we have some 3 sites, like white, black, white, or black, white, white, or this. And then you have to impose some kind of rule how, let's say, black, white, white is transformed into what kind of configuration, like, let's say, white, black, black instead of black, white, white. And this is, I think, having much more degrees of freedom than just a few. I think you can still have some rooms to play by manipulating these rules. And also, this local cellular automaton is not the only cellular automaton matter model that are known. In fact, there's actually other kind of a whole different kind of cellular automaton model called a ball box system. It's again a cellular automaton, but follows a completely different rule. I'm not an expert on it. I just heard a bit about it. It can be morally understood as a kind of hard rod. With a bunch of rods with different widths. So for usual hard rod, you have just a fixed length for each hard rod, but for the ball box system, you can understand the excitations as a bunch of hard rods with a different widths. So it's a bit more complicated than rule 54, I'd say. And the rule of the ball box system is at least it looks to me very non-local, but still you can play with it and have a net control. It can actually be understood as an ultra-discretization of KdV equation, so there is a strong connection with integrability as well. So maybe ball box kind of cellular automata system might be a good thing to look at, but I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, could you send me a reference for that?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me. Okay,
thank you.
Let me search now.
Right, I'm just going to stop the recording in the meantime.
Yep.